Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections.
Hello, welcome to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And we have a return guest, someone who's been with us before, one of my dear friends and a true hero. A true American hero and a true hero to the election integrity movement in America. And that is the Secretary of State, the great Secretary of State of West Virginia, Mac Warner, the Honorable Mac Warner. So thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being with us today.
Thank you. Always good to be with you, Cleta.
So I wanted particularly to have you come and talk with us because you recently testified before the Congress of the United States and the House Administration Committee about elections and about a particular bill. And so we're going to go through that. But I was really struck by many things that you said in your testimony and in your follow-up letter to the committee. But I want to start with, tell everybody what you told the committee and what and about your history as a military officer and your background before you became Secretary of State.
Well, thank you, Cleta. The testimony was directed at restoring confidence in American elections. This was in front of the House Administration Committee. And they asked me to testify. I was the only Secretary of State that was asked to testify. And I'm confident that that was due to the things that West Virginia is doing to keep the confidence high in the electorate, the way that we have balanced access with security in the elections. And so a lot of this is coming from my military background, having worked, well, attended the United States Military Academy at West Point, and that's going to become germane here in a minute. And then, of course, as a military officer, the oath that you take to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that's going to become germane here in just a minute. And then as an international lawyer, having worked on constitutions in various countries that had failed, now they're trying to come into the modern age, and especially 5 years there in Afghanistan, where I worked as the senior person in the world's largest rule of law program, where I was working with the Supreme Court of Afghanistan, the Ministry of Justice, the Attorney General's Office, and interestingly, the Department of Women's Affairs. And so it gave me some unique perspectives on what needs to be done to build a system, to have confidence in both the rule of law, the importance of following the rule of law, and then in having safe and fair elections. So all these things come together. And what we saw in the 2020 election was what I call the worst election interference in our nation's history happened in 2020. And that's what I closed with in that testimony in front of the House Administration Committee. And we can get into the details of that when you'd like. But that's a quick background, the military background, the legal background, all of that plays out in what I have done as a Secretary of State in cleaning up the voter lists in West Virginia. We've taken off over 400,000 names from the voter registration list in West Virginia. We only have 1.1 million registered voters. So that's about one in four of those names that have come off the list. So we have the cleanest lists ever. We have the highest voter confidence in the state's history. We've overcome this checkered background that we had in West Virginia with election integrity. You may recall the John Kennedy election was stolen from Hubert Humphrey in the Democratic primary in West Virginia. And once they got away with it here, then they took that to Illinois, magnified it, and the rest is history. John Kennedy stole that election from Richard Nixon back in 1960. And so for decades here in West Virginia, people laughed about that, and there's nothing funny about it. So we've overcome that. We've cleaned up our voter registration list. We have a good balance between access and security. And that was the message that I delivered to Congress.
So you make such a good point, Mr. Secretary, because I will tell you that when I was working for President Trump as a volunteer attorney in the post-election 2020 and really thinking through, looking at what had happened in that election, and what I saw was that they just abandoned the rule of law. If the legislature said, this is what is required to have a valid registration, then in according to the law, if a vote is cast by someone who's not properly registered, according to the statute, that's an illegal vote. And we found thousands and thousands of those in Georgia. And subsequent to the 2020 election, we've seen after action reviews that have found the same thing in Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania. So talk to us about, so I really appreciate what you're saying about that. They call us election deniers. They make up names, call us, you know, we're not denying there is an election. We just deny that it was conducted according to the rule of law. But talk about let's just start with the thing that you said was the biggest problem, the biggest interference with the 2020 election. And you testified about that in Congress, and you wrote about that in your follow-up letter. So tell everybody what you said and what you believe about that.
Sure. What you've addressed are these votes outside the law, or what I would say are illegal votes. And there were more of those illegal votes than the margin of victory of Biden over Trump. And so I think from that perspective alone, you can say that the election was unfair or stolen, because that gap between what is permissible or directed by the state legislatures, and that's the right authority, according to the Constitution, state legislatures draft those laws. So the votes that came in consistent with the U.S. Constitution, Trump won that election. Now, if you include these votes outside the law, that's what you're addressing happened in Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and elsewhere. But the biggest thing, see, that I addressed that in part of my testimony to Congress, but the biggest thing that happened where the election was stolen beyond any question, and that was in the lie that these federal agencies did concerning the Hunter Biden laptop. The CIA, at the initiation of Tony Blinken, who is now our Secretary of State, but was then on the Biden campaign, Biden placed this idea in Michael Morrell's head that they needed to come up with a counter to the Hunter Biden laptop story. And so Morrell wrote the letter, got 50 other so-called experts, intelligence experts, to sign on to it. And then they purposely lied to the American people for the purpose of throwing an election. And that's exactly what they did. They lied to the American people. They blamed it on Trump, saying that this was a Russian disinformation campaign. And then Biden exacerbated the problem when he cited that letter that he knew was false, that had come from his own campaign. He cited it in that debate just 2 weeks before the election to discredit Trump. And then it gets worse with Google, Facebook, Twitter covering it up, and the mainstream media covering it up. And so they took off Trump from Twitter. They started to not allow people to talk about the Hunter Biden laptop. And that's how this election was stolen. It was a lie to the American people. Again, I call it the most insidious. It was inside our own federal agencies, these agencies that are sworn to protect and defend us. And they lied to us. And that's where I'm saying the rule of law must be followed. They didn't do that. That's why this election wasn't fair. It was stolen. And the worst part, here's where I get back to West Point. I was on the honor committee at West Point. And there the honor code at West Point is a cadet will not lie, cheat, steal, or tolerate those who do. And so the toleration clause is just as much of a lie if you violate that as it is if you doing an outright lie, if you tolerate somebody who lies and you know about it. And so that's what the FBI did with this letter. The FBI knew that the Hunter Biden laptop was real. They had had it for about a year. They knew there was nothing, no Russian disinformation. And yet when the agencies came out and signed this letter, and I'm talking not just the CIA, but the NSA, the DNI, there were a number of 300 agencies, these people had signed on to it, and the FBI sat by quietly. So I think that they are implicated. They are just as guilty as the others. And that's why all those agencies need to be cleaned out. And anybody that participated in this needs to be have their security clearances taken away and perhaps even investigated for criminal actions.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Twitter kicked off the New York Post, which was writing about the story. They got the laptop and they investigated it. And let's tell people what was in the laptop. I mean, a lot of people, as it turned out, really didn't know anything about it until well after the election. What did I read something, 40% of Democrats said that had they known about that, they would not have voted for Biden. Yeah.
Yeah, there was an independent polling that was done that showed that, yes, had these Democrats known about the Hunter Biden laptop and known about its contents and known its authenticity, they would not have voted for Biden, perhaps even voted for Trump. And that was significantly enough to overturn the election, to give it back to Trump, where it duly belongs. So, yeah, the contents were, I mean, all sorts of things. Of course, the videos with prostitutes and, you know, hookers and that sort of thing. But there was evidence of his father's involvement in his business deals and just lurid details and his dealings with Burisma and, you know, what happened in Ukraine, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of content there that all not only cast doubt or shadows on Hunter Biden, but also his relationship with his father, where his father, Joe Biden, had said he had nothing to do with the business dealings and so on. So that's where all these emails and the contents of this need to come out so the American people can make an informed decision about who should be president of the United States.
Well, and I just saw something yesterday along these lines that have come out as they were getting the information and the emails, that former FBI director Louis Freeh paid $100,000 to the trust funds of President Biden's granddaughters. And he's telling Hunter Biden in these emails that he's put this money into these trust accounts and hopes that Joe Biden, as he's leaving the White House, will be able to do business with him. I mean, that's basically what I read yesterday. Have you seen that?
I had not seen that part, but it doesn't surprise me. Nothing surprises me right now. When you have the FBI, CIA, NSA, DNI lying to us purposely, and it's stated, this isn't just my, you know, interpretation. This is in the emails themselves in black and white, saying that they did this in hopes of throwing the election, of giving it to Biden. They were doing anything they could to stop President Trump from getting reelected. And it was done, again, for political purposes. This is what's so incendiary to me, is that our own agencies did this with a political intent in mind. They put it in writing on emails. It's almost like they're proud of this. Just like I said, people were proud back in 1960 when they stole the election, when John Kennedy stole the election in West Virginia. I'm seeing the same sort of behavior happening right now, where they're almost proud of the fact that they kept President Trump from being reelected, but they did it illegally.
Well, you know, now then, I guess the thing is, what do we do now? And now what we see is the House Oversight Committee, House of Representatives, U.S. House of Representatives Oversight Committee has released information, but we haven't seen any of it yet, that there's this web of offshore bank accounts involving many, many, many members of the Biden family going back many, many years, which is just a crime syndicate, practically, where it's all the Biden family members are all getting this money. And none of that was allowed to be discussed at the time when he was a candidate for president. And even today, the corporate big media is not reporting about all of this. At least now it's coming out in some of the big tech sources, but it's just becoming apparent that this was truly ongoing, potentially criminal activity.
Cleta, this is done by the best people in the world at obfuscation, at misdirection, disinformation. This is our own CIA, okay, and other similar agencies. And they are trained to do this sort of thing. And the idea is to, if either one, lie and misdirect to the people, or confuse them with so much information that they don't know what to believe. And I think that's where most of America is right now. They hear it from both sides. They don't know what to believe. They're tired of it. And that's why we have to go back. And fortunately, we had Republicans elected in the 2022 election that allows them to at least start turning over these rocks and looking at what happened in these various states and through our own federal agencies. So to answer your question, what we have to do is, one, let Congressman Jordan continue his and encourage his investigation into what happened with these 300 agencies at the federal level. Then we have to encourage each of the states to review their own laws to close that gap between what is directed that they do and what is not permitted. But that gap, what I'm talking about there, is drop boxes, accepting ballots 3 days after an election, accepting ballots without signatures and addresses, voting by mail, same day registration, all those things that they got away with in that 2020 election. We need to now go back. And you saw what Georgia did when they tried to introduce voter ID, and they were called voter suppressionists and racists and all sorts of things. And the results were actually between 2020 and 2022, the voting percentages went up. So there was nothing wrong with voter ID. Most people want that. People want security. When they have security, then they're more likely to vote and participate. So that's where we need to go, is to encourage that and not let the mainstream media get away with, like what you said, calling people election deniers, and ridiculing secretaries of state and other people that are wanting to, and the legislatures that want to do the right thing. We need to encourage that so that we close that gap and don't leave this middle ground where people can use Zuckerbucks to buy elections and that sort of thing. That's what we need to do, is encouraging our state legislatures to do their jobs and direct how you're supposed to run an election. And if you don't do it according to those rules, there should be a penalty that's associated with it. And then direct whether those votes should count or not count. So let's use the example in Georgia with drop boxes, or better yet, Wisconsin, where people drop ballots into drop boxes. And then later, now the Wisconsin Supreme Court has come back and said, that's not proper. That was not permitted.
It was not legal. It was illegal.
So now the legislature should address those votes should not count. Okay. They should also then penalize the people who do that and the people who accept the ballots. That's what I'm talking about, is closing that gap, is directing. We've identified the problem now. Now let's go back and address how we fix those things so we have a clean election in 2024.
Well, you know, I'm really worried about that. I've gotten a lot of criticism in the last few weeks, because one of the things that I have realized is I've seen what 10 years ago, a group of leftist state legislators made a laundry list of the things they were going to get done to try to change the political system. And right. Three of the 10 or so things on their list had to do with how do we get college students to vote? Because historically, that's been a low turnout portion of the electorate. And so they basically made it where they get same day registration. They put the polling place right there on the campus, which is not really accessible to other voters because it's not easy to access a college campus. As you know, there's not parking. There's not. And some campuses really are closed to a lot of visitors, depending because of security reasons. But if you have same-day registration and then you have registered in one line, vote in another line. And in Michigan, we saw instances where they were registering people after the close of the polls and still counting the ballots they went over and cast in the other line. In one polling place at one of the campuses, over 900 illegal votes were cast and counted using that method. And so people have gotten upset with me. Well, you don't want young people to vote. I want them to vote, but I don't want to create a polling place that's there for political purposes, because they know the outcome. If they can just roll them out of bed and get them back to bed, that they're going to vote 95% for one party. That's not a fair election. And there's statutes in a lot of states that say that you can't locate polling places in a partisan location.
Exactly. That's why we talk about free and fair elections. You're addressing the fairness part of this. Let me talk just for a second about the same day registration. It sounds like it. Well, why wouldn't you want to be able to register and vote on the same day? And the answer is because then you can't verify those votes until sometime after. Verify that the person is who they say they are. They live where they say they are, that they voted the right ballot, those sorts of things. And any delay after the election causes uncertainty and lack of confidence in those election results. That's why, again, West Virginia reports our results on election night, and that's why people have high confidence that there isn't time for the cheating and the mischief to occur. Exactly. So, and it also occurs on the front end. If you start voting a month before and allow an excessive amount of early voting, any voting that takes place away from the trained observers, opposite parties at a polling location, then people have questions. So if somebody's picking up ballots at a nursing home and delivering them, trafficking them, dropping them in drop boxes, doing same day registration, all those sorts of things add to the uncertainty of the election. And that's where we need to go back and have state legislatures. So I'll describe West Virginia very briefly. We allow early voting, but it's 10 days. It's a very specific time right before the election. We allow absentee voting, but you have to have a reason. It's not no excuse. You have to fit one of 11 reasons that the legislature has given such as a medical excuse, you're out of state on business, that sort of thing, serving in the military, that gives you the option to vote absentee, but you have to have a reason to do it. Then the majority of our people vote on election day in front of those trained observers. So that's why there's this high confidence. And again, that's why I was asked to testify in front of Congress, was to share these best practices with the rest of the United States and say, get on board and we'll stop having this divisive nature in America between the left and the right due to our elections.
Well, you know, one of the things that you've talked about and that I think is absolutely vital, and you did it when you first got elected, and that is to clean the voter rolls. I mean, talk about what happened and what you did and how we get other election administrators to do what you did. But tell everybody what you did, because that's pretty shocking.
Sure. What happened was in 1993 was the NVRA, the National Voter Registration Act, and that required states to allow people to register at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Now, that may have made sense at the time because people didn't have the personal computers, they didn't have the cell phones and that sort of thing that we now have. And people can register online 24/7, okay? So you don't need to be registering people at the DMVs. But the other half of that was that every 2 years, the secretaries of state were required to clean their voter rolls. But there was no stick with that. There was nothing that forced people to do that. And so the red states, for the most part, did that cleanup, and they kept their voter rolls or to the extent they could. But the blue states, and I was a blue state, West Virginia was a blue state for so many decades, they just never chose to clean up the voter registration list. So those poll books just got thicker and thicker. Then they complained that there was low voter turnout. Well, they were using the numbers about people who had died and still remained on the rolls or had moved and were still on the rolls. So when I came into office, after I'd been elected, but before I took office, I sat down with a number of county clerks. And by the way, the vast majority of the clerks in West Virginia were Democrat. But they wanted the clean voter rolls. They don't like to deal with the thick poll books, printing off extra ballots. See, when we had the paper ballots, you had to have 110% of the paper ballots of the people registered. And so again, if you had bloated rolls, you're just printing off extra ballots, waste of money, difficulty in tracking, keeping accountability of those ballots and so forth. So they asked to help for my help in cleaning it up. So it was a matter of will. This is the bottom line, Cleta. It's just a matter of will. It's saying, yes, we're going to address this and we're going to get after it. We're going to follow the law and clean up those voter registration lists. And so the numbers started coming down. When I came into office, West Virginia had four counties that had more registered voters than they did eligible voters. Well, clearly, it's ripe for fraud. So anyway, we've now taken off over 400,000 of those names, and it's mainly people who have moved. Duplicate registrations. Somebody registers as Bob Jones and then another time Robert Jones. But is that a son and a father? You have to get in there and a clerk has to clean that up. And then also dead people, felons, that sort of thing. But 400,000 in a small state like West Virginia is just incredible. And if we have that problem here, you've got it in a whole lot of states, and you have to get people who are willing to apply the effort to clean up the voter rolls.
Well, I absolutely think that that's one of the keys to restoring confidence. And one of the things, you make a good point, when they talk about percentage of voter turnout, if you don't have clean voter rolls and you've got, say, 400,000 more registrations than you do people, well, then your percentage turnout is going to look like it's way lower than it really is. And that's something that, and maybe that's one of the things the left has wanted, because they've been wanting to say, because we make it so hard for people to vote, look how low the turnout is. Well, no, it's not hard for people to vote, but we want to make it where people are real people who have their identity verified, and we have clean voter rolls, so we know what actual turnout is.
Exactly. It's all just common sense stuff. But again, the left doesn't want to use common sense. They want to leave those names on because that gives them an opportunity for the improprieties to occur.
So I noticed that, I think it was the Associated Press, after your testimony, did a hit piece on you. Many people don't know that the Associated Press has become yet one more very leftist media outlet. They used to be considered, you know, good journalists, neutral. They are not neutral any longer. And I noticed, so they went through and attacked you for everything that you said to Congress and everything you're talking about here. But I noticed, at the bottom of that article that they have a disclaimer saying that they now accept funding from foundations or whatever, because the AP is a nonprofit entity. I'll bet you any amount of money, I know where that foundation money is coming from, because there are these leftist foundations that give money to media entities to help them cover certain things in a way that they like. And I just thought it was very interesting that here's the AP attacking you, but they haven't said who's giving them money. You might ask that question. We might all ask that question. Okay, Associated Press, you're interested in transparency and reporting facts. Tell us who's giving you money.
Exactly. I think that they think that they're hurting me with these attack pieces, but when you're getting attacked by the mainstream media, you're probably doing the right thing. And so they always resort to the election denier piece. They talk about the big lie. They have these labels that they continue to refer to, because then that keeps them from having to do the due diligence and the actual reporting that would require some work. So it's easier just to label somebody with a call them a name and try to discredit them. But at least here in West Virginia, the people understand that the mainstream media is not something that they can trust. And so basically, if they're attacking me, what we need to do is get away from the labels and get the left and the right going further to the left and further to the right. We need to look at that middle ground I talked about earlier and address those issues, because if we don't, we're just going to continue to have these questions about the elections and the lack of confidence. And it's going to take things like what you're doing right here, and that is talking at length with people, because some of this doesn't allow itself to a bumper sticker slogan to resolve. We really have to talk about each one of these votes outside the law, illegal votes, and then address how we're going to clean that up. And that's where the conversation needs to go. And again, only about half of America wants to do that. The other half has no interest in changing things. They got away with it once. You see Zuckerbucks being reinvented in 2.0 and 3.0, different ways to continue to use private money to fund government elections. That's our job, is to run the free and fair elections, not Google or Facebook. You don't want an election to be sponsored like you have NASCAR races by Pennzoil and Exxon and that sort of thing. You want elections to be free and fair that we all can count on. But that starts with the Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, the time, manner, and place of elections shall be left to state legislatures, not secretaries of state, not governors, not attorney generals, to the state legislatures. That's where the emphasis needs to be. And that's why these local elections are so important, to elect people who represent your state, your community's ideas, and then get the laws in place to eliminate that middle ground that leaves the ambiguity in our elections.
Well, you know, one of the things that I fully believe is that I think most Democrats, most independents, we look at the polling on particular issues like voter ID, like making sure the election returns are in by election night, about cleaning the voter rolls. Those are wildly popular concepts, not just with Republicans, not just with conservatives, but with Democrats, with independents, with Black voters, with Hispanic voters. It's just that there's this small cadre of leftist elitists who control things, and they really do want to change the system. So it's not a level playing field.
Because
you look at state after state after state, when the Democrats take power, the first thing they do is enact a series of election changes that make it impossible for there to be a fair election in the future where a Republican might have the opportunity to win. That's happened in state after state. It's happened yesterday in Minnesota, where the governor just signed in this whole series of election changes that will enable the political operatives on the left to ensure that no Republican has a chance to win in the future.
Well, and that's exactly why we got out of ERIC, because of that. ERIC's the Electronic Registration Information Center, and they had become so partisan that they had an ex officio member who was highly partisan and just didn't want to come off the board. They told us time and time again they would address some of these issues we brought up to ensure fundamental fairness. And when they didn't, they showed their true colors. And that's why West Virginia joined Missouri and Florida and pulled out. Prior to that, Alabama and Louisiana had done that. You can't have somebody putting their finger on the scale voter registration lists and election integrity. And that's what Eric had done. It's why we pulled out of it. So you're exactly right. We've got to get the partisanship out of it. Do find the common ground where the majority of Americans, whether it's Republican or Democrat, do believe in voter ID and fundamental fairness, checks and balances. And that's the way we're going to restore confidence in America.
Well, and I really like what you said about West Virginia's law, because I've started calling it unsupervised voting, because when you have this no excuse absentee voting, you know, if you think about it, most states over the course of the past century have created these protections. So when people come to the polls to vote, you can't have electioneering and campaigning within so many feet of the polls. You have people there who are trained workers. If someone has a question or if they spoil their ballot, they can get help, but help from a neutral party, not a political operative. And when you have this, everybody's voting at home, voting by mail. Well, guess what? Those people are really prone, and the people who are most prone, most susceptible to manipulation by political operatives are the most vulnerable populations in our communities. And we've seen that over and over again, that people who maybe have English as a second language, people who are, you know, the lower income people, and they're very susceptible to manipulation. And I would argue that college students are basically in the same situation because there's so much peer pressure. I actually decided that maybe the college student situation, the polling places should only be eligible to be located on the premises of an institution or an entity that allows speakers from all persuasions, from all political parties, that you have a true, robust exercise of the First Amendment of all ideologies and platforms, and that if you don't have that at a college campus, then you can't have a polling place there. Let them choose.
But you're really hitting at the heart of American, our freedoms, First Amendment rights, that sort of thing. And that's what the left has hammered us. They've changed the terminology. They've changed the language. And then if you don't accept their version of it, you know, their version of what is their so-called reality, then you're labeled and you're silenced. And that's what the problem with Twitter, Google, Facebook, and all those are, is when they start deciding what's right and what's wrong and shutting us down, then you don't have that freedom that you just referred to. And then there goes America. So
go ahead.
I just said we have a real battle on our hands.
We do have a real battle on our hands. And, you know, it started with when Obama was president, and he said that people needed curated news, curated news. That means we're going to tell you what you can hear and not hear and see and not see. And then that manifested itself as we started this conversation. It manifested itself by our own government taking the position that they did not want the American people to see or hear the information about Hunter Biden and his father and the payments going back and forth from the Ukraine and other countries. It's a very serious situation. I really do. I'm very worried about the future of the country.
And I just want to put an exclamation point on that. That was our CIA and our FBI. The CIA is responsible for the intelligence outside the United States. The FBI is responsible for inside the United States. Then you complicate that with the Director of National Intelligence and the NSA, these other 300 agencies, and they all joined together for the specific purpose of throwing this election, to keep President Trump from being reelected. That was their stated purpose in those emails. That's the point I really want to drive home to folks. They admitted that that's what they were doing, and it was done by Tony Blinken, our current Secretary of State, working in concert with Mike Morrell at the CIA, and then you had Facebook, Twitter, Google. With Twitter, it was just taking President Trump off. So he doesn't have the freedom of speech. He couldn't tell the other side of the story, the real side. Okay. You have Facebook that's determining what you can post and what you can't. And if they don't like you, they shut you down. Then Google, with its algorithms that favor, when you Google something, then it puts the favorable stuff for Democrats towards the top and the unfavorable stuff to the Republicans right behind it. And so they can change the outcome of how people basically look at an independent who's trying to determine who to vote for, really hasn't paid that much attention to politics. And when they Google something, the things that come up favorable towards the Democrats. See, I think those are campaign contributions. I think those should be subject to campaign finance laws. Okay, if they're getting an undue advantage due to algorithms in the search engines, then I think that that's where I want Congress to act on Section 230 and that sort of thing, because I think that the it's giving way too much favoritism towards the Democrats and the progressives in this country and shutting down the conservatives.
You know, in October of 2020, when it became known that that Twitter had kicked off, had deplatformed, kicked off the New York Post because they were running the stories about the Hunter Biden laptop, on behalf of Tea Party Patriots, we filed an FEC complaint saying exactly what you just said, that what they were doing was making an illegal corporate contribution to the Biden campaign. And of course, the Twitter executives who responded signed affidavits and said, oh, that this had violated the policy. Well, it didn't violate any policy. They had allowed the New York Times to run and be on Twitter's with all about President Trump's tax returns, his leaked tax returns, attacking him. But they didn't say, and that literally was leaked. That was stolen information and was not given to them. And so in any event, it was dismissed. The case was dismissed. And I think that that the FEC should reverse itself and go back in and investigate that as an illegal corporate contribution, because they were essentially lied to, the commission.
Exactly. And what I'll take people back to is 30, 40, 50 years ago, with just the three major TV stations, to be fair, they actually would watch how much time a candidate or a party got online, and they had to give an equal amount of time to the other side. That doesn't exist in today's world of Facebook, Google, Twitter, and so on. And but when those corporate entities play favoritism, shutting down one side and promoting the other, you're exactly right. I'm glad to see you pursuing that vigorously.
Well, you know, I'm really glad to see that you're always out there fighting. You're fearless. You're not afraid to take on the conventional wisdom, the elites, saying what can and can't be done. Tell me what have you received in the way of any reaction of people? Of course, I doubt many people read the Associated Press, but that's why they're having to get contribution from left-wing foundations. But what's kind of been your, what have people said to you since then?
Well, they, of course, don't like the fact that they continue to use the same old, you know, routine of election denier and voter suppressionists, that sort of thing. But I think the people in West Virginia get it. They understand that is a leftist position. It's a talking point that continues to be used to try to discredit, you know, people on the right. But, you know, we voted 68-69% for President Trump. We are now a very conservative state who has aligned our politics with our people, with our policies. That's why West Virginia has turned the corner and is making great strides. We've landed some really big companies here over the last year or so, open for business. The economy is changing. So things are going well in West Virginia, and it's because of the people that we've elected, because of the confidence in the election system. And that's why, again, Congress has recognized that and has continued to ask me back to share our West Virginia success story with other states. Because, as you know, there are at least six or seven states, those swing states, that vastly need the process and procedures that we're using here to clean up their elections. But so far, the left has been pretty successful in beating those back. Like we talked about in Georgia, where they moved the Major League Baseball All-Star game out of Atlanta from a predominantly black city to a predominantly white city in Denver. Think of the irony of that.
Yes.
When they were complaining about these rules disenfranchising blacks or whatever. So it's really ironic. But as I said, they then look at the facts after the initiation of the voter ID and so on, and you see the voting percentages go up. So that tells us we're on the right path. We need to continue to do so, fight fiercely, and never give up, because if we do, there goes our democracy.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. And they always say they're trying to save democracy, but really we have a constitutional republic. And what I'm concerned about is, as Dr. Benjamin Franklin said, it's a republic, madam, if you can keep it. And I'm worried about keeping it. So we appreciate you and your leadership and helping us try to keep our constitutional republic. And we'll have you back whenever you have anything of interest to say. And you always have interesting things, and you're fighting for protecting our country. And so that's why we love having you come talk to us.
Thanks, Clita. It's always great talking with you as well.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thank you, Secretary Warner. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for joining us today on our podcast. Please subscribe so that you'll get this automatically. Please share it with your friends. Visit our website, whoscounting.us, and look at the things that you can do. Download our Citizens Guide. We have training videos telling people how they can be involved in the election system and the election process in your local counties, in your states. And let's all work together to do our best to try to reclaim our election system and have free and fair elections for all. And with that, we say thank you and goodbye. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.